and welcome to the Libertarianism.uk podcast again with me, Andy Duncan. Now, today's guest is very strange because I've known her for about 10 years, but this is actually the first time we've ever spoken together, which is very weird. She is a graphic artist. She's created some of the best memes on Liberty that you've ever seen. You'll recognise them when you see them. She's also worked at the Mises Institute and many other Liberty organisations. She is, of course, Natalie Fawn Danilishan, and there she is. And she goes under the name Chesschick or Chesschick01 on Twitter. And the reason we've got her on today is because she's gone from zero followers to 70,000 followers fighting against the Marxists in the culture war, which I think is amazing. And I think many more of us should attempt if we can't write books on economics. So we're going to talk to her about that today. We're going to start off, though, as I usually do. We're going to ask her about her own personal road to liberty, her own personal road to Austrian economics. Then we'll talk about how she grew her Twitter followings from zero to over 70,000. Now, it was 69,000 when we spoke about this last week, which is always a good number, but now it's 70,000. And then the third part of the show, we'll pick her brains and we'll try to figure out if you want to do this, if you want to build up your own Twitter feed or whatever social media feed it is, how you can grow it, how you can monetize it, and how we can fight, all of us individually, against the Marxists. So here she is. Hello, Natalie.
Hi, Andy. How are you today?
I'm very good. Now, I've just had a band of soldiers and sailors walking past me in Gibraltar practicing for the coronation on Saturday of King Charles III, I think it is. What have you unfrozen your cars in Ohio yet? Have you seen any greenness or any blue skies or the sun?
We have beautiful green popping up everywhere, and we have beautiful flowers blooming. And but this is Ohio, so it's been raining for the last 4 days, and it's been kind of miserable. Like, I wish the sun would come out for like 5 minutes. Now, the coronation, how's that going?
Well, I say I've just had all the military forces of Gibraltar walking past my apartment, going to Casemates Square.
Skipped him and went to William. That would have been great.
I mean, don't want to get into it now, but I'm actually going sailboarding on Saturday. I don't think I'll be watching the coronation. I know that's a crime. I shouldn't say that, but I agree with you. I think maybe we should just skip a generation. I've never really liked Charles, but let's just keep that between you and me. Anyhow, let's get into the show then. So my first kind of question to you is, what is your road to liberty? How did you go from somewhere in Ohio, presumably, to working at the Mises Institute? How did that happen?
That is a very long story, actually. I found the Mises Institute through Ron Paul and through my kid's dad. He introduced me, and we moved to Auburn in, 2007, 2008.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
And there we got involved with the Mises Institute. And I actually worked in the building for 2 years. Left in 2010 and went to DC for a year. And then moved back to Ohio because I had to help my parents, you know, take care of my family and stuff. And, but, you know, this whole time I was still interested in Ron Paul. I wanted to make memes to get the message out, to get Austrian economics out there. I thought that would be, you know, the quickest way to get the message of liberty out, you know, short snippets of all these intelligent men who are far more intelligent than myself. But so I started doing that. And actually in 2014, Jeff Deist found out what I was doing. He found my memes and he rehired me at the Mises Institute. Knowing I was previously like worked there. I wasn't fired. I was basically laid off because we were moving. I worked under Jeff Deist at the Mises Institute up until this year when Jeff resigned and I was let go. So I did that almost 11 years total between the two times I've worked at the Mises Institute. Who knows? It might be a third. We'll see what happens in 10 years.
I remember Ron Paul. I was into Austrian economics before Ron Paul did his presidential campaigns. But it's just you remember the blimp?
Yeah.
Remember the Ron Paul?
Oh, my gosh. I remember the Ron Paul.
That was so good.
It was so amazing. Those were good times. Those were happy times. Like 2008 to 2012, I loved those years because I actually felt like I had hope. Now, I mean, Ron Paul's still with us, bless his heart, and he's still going, he's still pushing the message. But it just feels like now it's a little too late. It feels like everything is going to collapse soon. That's really like deep down what it feels like. And at least in America. I don't know what it feels like overseas.
But. Yeah. Well, most of us in the West are just part of the American empire. You know, if you're stationing troops in Britain and Germany and Turkey and all these other places in Italy, I think there's 2,000 US military bases, 200 military bases for the US in Italy. You are part of their empire, even if it's called something else. I think even the EU is really part of the American empire. But we're not talking about that today.
What we're talking about is
your amazing rise on Twitter. So in your circle of friends, I saw a photo of it the other day. I've popped out of it, which is a bit sad, but I haven't been on Twitter much in the last few weeks. You've got Elon Musk, and that's just one of the many, many, many famous people in your kind of Twitter circle.
How have
you done this? How have you created this?
I don't know. I really don't. I think people have to have a knack for communicating and connecting with people in a very real sense. For me, it's like a chess game. I do play chess, but like connecting people to other people, I tell people connections are currency. I don't think they really understand that. But if you know somebody who knows somebody, you can help somebody in another round of your circle. It's just connecting the dots in one move and one counter move back and forth. And it's one of my favorite things about Twitter because it's kind of like a game. But in a real sense, you're meeting people, you're making friends, lifelong friends in very real instances. And all of those people, you know, are willing to help you if you help them back. And it's just quite a beautiful thing because if we don't have these connections in society, I think as a whole, we lose. And like other media outlets, like social media outlets, like Facebook and Instagram and stuff, they don't have the same type of you can instantly connect with somebody like on Twitter. Like that's how I met my friend Rob Schneider. I found him on Twitter quoting Mises. And then next thing I know, you know, I'm texting Rob Schneider and, you know, meeting up with him at an event and everything. And that's been wild. And you just have to be able to put yourself out there. That's one major thing. You know, if you're wrong, you're wrong. You have to be able to admit that in social media posts, you know, and especially now because they have community notes that fact checked you. I haven't had that happen to me yet, actually. So that's great. But it's just a matter of putting yourself out there, connecting with people and being okay with everything that comes along with that. It's not always fun being a big, I don't even consider myself a big account. I have 70,002 as of today, but it's something that you just have to be able to do and put yourself out there.
Yeah, I mean, if you were doing it, if you were doing something on that, some American football team, or you were criticizing movies in the media, you know, you could have hundreds of thousands. But you're talking about economics, so your pinned first tweet is about getting rid of the Federal Reserve. So it's the driest of driest subjects. So I think it's amazing. Now along the way, you'll probably have had big uplifts. So you've probably been 1,000, 1,000, 1,000, 1,000, and then suddenly it's 10. Can you remember any of those days where you did a tweet and suddenly it's jumped up? And tell us about those.
One day I went from 1 million impressions to 21.8 million. And that was because Elon Musk replied to me and I made it to Fox News. And then he started liking, he scrolled through my timeline and started liking content. And then a lot of people who Elon Musk follows also follow me. So we're all kind of in this little circle. Which is great because my friend Michael Rechtenwald, he needed help unbanning his account yesterday, and I was able to get him to the people who unban accounts. So it's just a matter of, just doing it.
Yeah. So do you have any kind of strategy? Do you just do things randomly as they occur to you? Or do you think I need to post something on this, this, and this?
My biggest thing is getting Austrian economics and free market stuff to the right people, to the people who might be willing to listen. So under those bigger accounts, I post the information and where people can find more information or links to things or a meme, because memes are the quickest way to grab people's attention. They really are, because we live in a one-click society in a sense. And so I just post the memes and stuff, and they get a lot of interaction. Usually under a comment, I can get 800 to 1,000 likes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you put a photo, I don't know, a photo of a butterfly in a field, and It'll get thousands of likes, which is pretty good. Now, I think this achieves something, because I did a speech at the PFS once about how we need to take the war back to the Marxists by fighting against them in the cultural wars. Didn't have much effect at the time, I don't think, but you're doing it for real. So I'm a real believer in this. But do you think it achieves much? There's been some criticism that it's just echo chambers where we're all just talking to each other and it's all preaching to the converted. Do you think it goes beyond that? Do you think it achieves more liberty in society?
Well, personally, I think the left has already won the culture war. They really have. So there's no going back from that. It's just a matter of going forward. The best way I think the right can, you know, take back is to have children, have lots of babies and raise them the way, you know, you want them to, you know, you want society to be. So yeah, that's really it in that sense. But I don't know. I mean, doing it on social media, you're not really going to reach a lot of people. I do, but it's just sheer dumb luck that I've made it this far, really. I was looking at my numbers the other day and it was crazy because I was going beyond every Austrian econ professor that has taught me. I have more followers than them, and that's odd to me. Like, and I think what it boils down to is that I'm a woman talking about this stuff, like economics, chess, and all this other stuff. And not a guy who would probably get like 10 likes.
Yeah. So, that's a bit discouraging for my kind of mission to get more people to do this. But before we talk about that, maybe, one of the things that comes with the territory of having a lot of followers is you get a lot of abuse. Yeah. Now, people have called you things online, which I can't even say because it might get a strike on YouTube. How do you deal mentally with lots and lots of tweets criticizing you in quite strong ways? How do you deal with that?
I think the worst criticism I've ever gotten was from people who called themselves my friend, and that hurt a lot. And that's a lot of pain I had to deal with over the years. And I think because of that, it's kind of made me numb to the regular rando person on the internet. Now, I will say that when COVID started, they gave me the nickname Aryan Barbie, because I was fighting against the mandates, which is odd now that you look back at it, like I was being the Nazi. Yeah. Okay. I owned that title when it came out. I was like, okay, fine. You're going to call me Aryan Barbie. I'll be Aryan Barbie. And that's one of the reasons I started to go viral, because I was owning that name. And that's what you have to do. You have to not let the hate get to you and push back and make them seem irrelevant to their name calling. Meaningless words. Who was that? Orwell? No, that wasn't Orwell. Who was that? That was Orwell.
Oh, I can't remember. Well, that was Newspeak, wasn't it, George?
Newspeak,
Orwell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we can look that up later.
We're going to look that later up later. On.
Yeah. So you're dealing with all this online abuse. I mean, the Austrian school itself is called the Austrian school because it was originally an insult. So I think it was the German historical school. We're talking about these peasants in Austria and called it the Austrian school. So it's a long, noble tradition of taking on the insult and then wearing it. Which is why we have Austrian economics today. So Twitter has had this revival. So before Elon Musk took it over, all these big media companies were in a cabal, especially through COVID. So if you said something about a vaccine or a mask, I shouldn't say the V word. You said something that was against the message, then Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and the FBI and everyone would get together in a secret room and then censor you and ban you. But since Elon has taken over Twitter, that's gone for Twitter, at least. The rest of them are doing it a bit less because they're scared of now losing all their subscribers to Twitter if they ramp up the censorship again, which was safe when they were all doing it together. If someone does want to have a go at becoming a Twitter kind of influencer, should they just bother with Twitter, or are there any other social media channels that you think are useful for people to try and go down?
Twitter is my main. Twitter was the one I've always focused on, even before Elon Musk took it over, because I felt it's better to connect to high-paying people there. But I do have an Instagram. I do have a Facebook. but I'm considering deleting Facebook because it's like spyware. Same with TikTok, and I already deleted TikTok. Yeah. So, I mean, Twitter is probably the most free right now. And if you have issues, it's very, very easy to get those issues resolved right now. Elon's doing amazing with that. One of the reasons actually why I bought a subscription to Twitter is because Elon Musk unbanned all of my Twitter friends.
Yeah.
Basically, it felt like before Elon took it over, it felt like we were all dwindling down in numbers. Yeah. So, and now it just feels way more free. And he's really focused on free speech, you know, if it doesn't harm anybody, per se. Yeah. So, I think that's fantastic what he's doing. And I do recommend people just mainly focus on Twitter right now.
Yeah. Now, some people have said that he might be, Mr. Musk might be a bit of a stooge. He might be like Fox News, which is controlled opposition, as we've seen with Tucker Carlson. And Elon Musk is controlled freedom. So that he's in control of it, just so they can track the future enemy. What do you think of that idea?
I think he's a very nice person. that's about it I can say. But I will say, I mean, Elon's a dad, and he sees what's going on in this country, and he, I think, wants to push back and wants to make a better future for all the generations that are coming of age, and I have hope in him that he's going to do the right things. I don't always agree with Elon and his moves, and that's okay. I mean, if you can meet somebody halfway, that should be good enough, especially these days. You won't have anybody agree with you 100% of the time, and there's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I think he's a good person trying to do something good. A natural elite, we could call him. More of those.
Yeah, I mean, Hopper's into that, isn't he? The Hopper's into the natural aristocratic elite. I'm fine with it as well. Oh, by the way, I just for everyone's for the record, I am a bit of an Elon fanboy, but that's mainly because of SpaceX as well as Twitter. And I feel much better on Twitter than I do on Facebook. I had numerous petty little bans on Facebook, and now I just treat it like a diary. It's I don't do anything significant. It's just a diary and a bit of fun, and that's it. You know, we're all hunting for dopamine every day, and so I just do the odd diary post, really, and I don't do anything at all that's in any way significant. So hopefully Facebook will die within the next year or two. Okay, let's move on then to our random person. And you've said you just got hit the jackpot. You're one of Napoleon's lucky generals, and you just got to this thing, and you'll get to 100,000, and you'll get to 1 million, and we'll see you at the Oscars. I don't know. Twitter Oscars. Now, if I am a determined person and I still want to have a go at trying to build up a followership on Twitter to help push back against the Marxists somehow, are there any mistakes you've made along the way which they should avoid? Have you got any advice for them on what they need to do to go along a track of creating this influence ship?
Be humble. I think a lot of the time people let arrogance guide them. I've watched people, I've gotten banned by people when I was just trying to point out knowledge to them. And yeah. I think that's a dangerous arrogance in a sense, especially in this society. You might not agree with what I'm saying, but the fact is that that's knowledge I'm trying to impart to you, so you have it in your back pocket. And some people don't like that very much, apparently, but it needs to be said. And what is the other thing? Connecting to people and just reaching out and finding like-minded people with bigger accounts. That is like the number one thing you have to do. You just have to. And start tweeting to them nonstop and annoy them. It's a funny story. Congressman Thomas Massey is actually a friend of mine. And the running joke between him and I is that I harassed him until he followed me on Twitter, which is pretty much true. I just kept tweeting to him until he followed me. And now I just harass him in DMs. But he's a great guy. But that is what you have to do. If you're interested in somebody and want to connect to them, you need to just start tweeting at them. A lot of people just don't think like that and just tweet on their timeline thinking they'll get all this engagement, and you won't. You need the help of other people. And I consider these people my friend. I don't know how many people know this, but subscription buttons have popped up on Twitter now. So like every person that has helped me on my Twitter journey, I'm like, subscribe.
Yeah.
So that's another thing you can do. You can subscribe. Subscription buttons are amazing right now because it gives you a behind the scenes connection to the higher.
How's that different from just following them then?
Well, it's a smaller circle. Like I just subscribed to my friend Zuby because he's helped me out so much with my Twitter following. And so you go behind the scenes, and instead of a tweet with like 100+ comments, which he gets, there's a tweet with, you know, 10 comments, and you're going back and forth with Zuby, and it's private, which I appreciate very much. I'm hoping for my subscription button very soon because I want to start private tweeting. So that's one of the better things, and something I highly suggest somebody who's trying to grow their Twitter following, go find your like-minded people, and if they have a subscription button, hit subscribe. I've subscribed to Elon Musk as well.
Yeah.
People give me a hard time about it. Like, why are you subscribing to a billionaire? And I'm like, why not?
I mean, who knows? I might get a ride to the moon out of it. So it's okay to what I'm going to call this, harass someone with tweeters, because I always feel a bit kind of nervous and a bit dirty when I start constantly tweeting on someone's things. Is it okay to do that?
You tweet on my stuff all the time. That's okay. I don't mind.
Yeah, that's because we've been friends for 10 years. But if I just go to someone else, and I start, let's say Per Byland, I started seeing his things a couple of months ago. And
Per would love it. Just start tweeting on all of Per's stuff. I'm serious. Per, he's trying to get his Twitter. Something's wrong with his algorithm on his page. He's not getting the reach he should be getting for his numbers. But just start tweeting to these people. You know, it's like a dopamine rush, like you said before, because they're getting the engagement that they're interested in. And even the bigger accounts, they want that engagement. So it's just a matter of you finding them and going there and growing. And you'll find so many great people and so many like-minded people. I love going to events and having people. It's still weird for me, but people who I don't know come up to me and say, I follow you on Twitter. And it's great. Keep it up. And I'm just like, thank you. And I'm sorry. I apologize for it. I don't know why, but I'm
all. Do you have people wanting selfies with you now?
Yes,
I do. You reached that level of fame.
Yeah, wow. I've reached that level. It's odd, but it's lovely at the same time, because I'm like, wow, people actually appreciate the time I've put in and dedication and sweat and tears into my Twitter account.
And it's great for me as well because
I can go back and like boost other accounts. Like, I highly suggest people follow Per Byland, follow Jeff Deist, follow Tom Woods. These are all guys who have helped me grow over the years and have encouraged me and told me to keep going. And now I have bigger accounts than all of them except Tom. But it's just something you have to keep at every day. Wake up and keep going. It's kind of like a workout routine in a sense.
Yeah.
Because you have to get up and think about what you're going to talk about. Go through the news cycles. Go through what's going on. Like right now, I'm focused on the banking sector.
Yeah.
So I'll read the stocks and everything. And then you have to plan out your tweets and maybe do video, maybe do pictures, maybe do a meme, and then, you know, keep going. And then you can monetize it from there.
I was going to say, because if Elon Musk seems to be head of SpaceX, head of Tesla, head of Twitter, and he seems to be a full-time journalist doing 100 tweets a day. So it seems like if you really want a lot of engagement, you need to do it a lot of the time. So do you think it's possible to monetize it and make a kind of a living out of it?
Oh, it's very possible. Some of my friends actually who have bigger accounts, they are getting up to 500 to 800 subscribers. So That's a pretty penny right there. And on top of that, you can sell merchandise. When I was working for the Mises Institute, I was an affiliate in their bookstore. And last year I sold $3,000 in merchandise. So it's something, and it helps. And you can definitely do it by selling merchandise. You can do it by selling books. You can do it by subscriptions. attaching your YouTube channel to it if your YouTube channel is monetized. There's several ways to do it. One of the main ways, though, is also being an affiliate and selling merchandise for other people. I'm also affiliated with the Tuttle Twins. I'll try to sell books for them as well.
Now, just one more thing I wanted to ask you about Twitter before we kind of get to the wrap-up stage, and that's, do you think it's worth buying this $8 a month blue tick? Because it gives you longer videos, and it gives you unlimited tweets, and then you can edit them. Because one of the things I hate is you type something quickly late at night without your glasses on, and then there's a spelling mistake, and I'm horrible. I hate spelling mistakes, but with a blue tick, I'll be able to correct the spelling mistake. Do you think that's worth it then, buying the blue check mark?
You know, I've seen a lot of libertarians hate on Elon Musk and be like, I'm never buying the blue check mark. I'm not going to do it. And I think that's kind of ridiculous, because libertarians have been screaming about a free speech platform for ages now. And here we have Elon Musk coming through and doing it for us and making sure our voices are heard throughout all that. And I think on that alone, for myself, it's worth buying the blue tick. So I did buy the blue check mark. Yeah. But I will say, being able to upload longer videos, being able to upload longer tweets, all of that, it's fantastic. I love it. I really am loving the changes he's making. And he brought back Periscope yesterday. That was another strange thing. Bad resolution that will probably be fixed soon. But he's doing great things, and I don't mind supporting that, even if he is a billionaire, you know. Yeah. As long as he's there and willing to help, I'm going to support that billionaire.
Yeah. I've got no problem with him being a billionaire. I'm just jealous that I'm not a billionaire. It's not that I know, me feel too. Guilty about it.
No, that'd be nice. I would be happy if I was a millionaire. That would be great.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
And before he bought it, Twitter was constantly losing money, wasn't it? Anyway, so
yes, it was.
And he borrowed $44 billion to buy it, to get it off the left, get it off the FBI, get it off the censors.
Yeah.
So he's got to pay the interest on the $44 billion, and he's got to pay his staff, and he's got to turn it into a money-making thing. So I'm okay with him. Charge $8 a month. It's absolutely fine by me. I might do it myself. I'll see how I get along with it. Now, before we wrap up, I just wanted to ask you, is there anything I've missed asking you about how you think someone can create a large following on Twitter? Is there anything I've missed asking you about?
Try to get Elon Musk reply. That's a solid way. Oh man, I got like 4,000 followers that day. I did. Then more after I made it to Fox News. Just be yourself. I think a lot of people neglect that part when they're on Twitter. They try to be something they're not, and people can sense that very quickly. So be yourself and just have fun with it. And then people will catch on to that, and you'll get that following. You will. And that's just what I've done. Gotten a lot of hate. There's odd ways I tell people to end the Fed, like Cleveland shots and stuff, but it's fun for me. I enjoy doing it. So that's personally, I think, the best way. If you want a huge following, you just need to be yourself.
Yeah. I think you've got to use whatever assets you have to push your own message, haven't you? Whatever those assets happen to be. Right. Important stuff. So let's not go any further with that. Now, how do people, if people want to get hold of you to do some graphic art and design for them, what's the best way for them to get hold of you to do that?
Just DM me on Twitter, chesstrick01, and I'm happy to do that. I am currently jobless at the moment, because I resigned from one job, was let go from the other. So, if anybody has any leads in that area, I'm really into economics. So,
and is there anything you'd like to do next? Any interesting project that you'd like to attempt next?
Well, I want to get more into gold, silver, Bitcoin, and stuff. It's something that fascinates me, and banking and everything. So I'll probably go somewhere along those lines next.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what I'm trained in. I've been trained by all these Austrian men. So that's just where since I was 18, 17 was when I got Ron Paul. I was 17. So
yeah,
I really would like to abolish the Fed. That's my pet project. So I doubt that I can do it myself, but I will get the word out there. So one way.
That's a good pet project to have. And I always think it's funny how, I think, was it Mises said to his wife, Margaret, before she married him? He said, I will know more about money than anyone in the world. I just won't have very much.
Exactly. Yeah, that was Mises. Yeah. And Margit, I think that was in Mises, Margit's book, My Years with Ludwig von Mises. I love that book. And actually, everybody should read it because it reads like a novel, like how they had to, how they met, how he got sick, how they had to run from the Nazis and Ludwig was on the blacklist. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful book. It's probably one of my favorite Austrian books to like read.
Yeah, it's like relax. That escape across France is amazing. It's a bit like Casablanca, you know, when people are trying to get out of Casablanca. I'm incredible how they did that.
Remember the part where she had her hair curlers in and she was at the salon and then she had to go run and get Ludwig and they had to hop on a train, I think it was. I'm trying to remember it off the top of my head, but
I think they were 70 kilometers ahead of the Wehrmacht at one point, weren't they? And Hitler really wanted to get Mises. The first thing they did when they took Vienna was they raided his flat and took all his books away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then all those books went to Berlin and then they got stolen by the Russians and ended up in Moscow, which Guido Hulsman was telling me. Absolutely incredible.
Well, it was Richard Ebling who found the books. I'm sorry. I was going to say it was Richard Ebling and his wife who found the books. I know that story. And bless their heart. I'm so glad they did.
Yeah. Which gave Guido a treasure trove to go through when he wrote the Last Night of Liberalism.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that pretty much does it at this end. I'd like to thank you very much for your time today, which is absolutely amazing. I wish you the best of luck in the future with all your... I hope you get to 100,000 soon, and then that grows to 1 million. I'd like to thank everyone for watching today. Hope you've enjoyed the program. If you have, smash that like and subscribe and so on to help us grow this YouTube channel so that we can push more and more liberty-based ideas. So, again... thank you very much, Natalie, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you.